Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
It's strange how grief changes the way you see things. After my wife, Sarah, passed away, I couldn't stay in the city anymore. Too many reminders, corners and cafes haunted by memories I wasn't ready to face. People kept telling me Ellie was young enough to adapt, that kids are resilient, but I could see it in her eyes. She didn't fully understand why Mommy wasn't coming home. Neither did I. So, we moved back to Alders Creek, the small town I'd grown up in, to live in the house my parents had left me before they passed. It was a quiet place, nestled on the edge of sprawling woods that stretched for miles. Sarah was never one for the countryside. That was part of the reason we never lived here ourselves, even though we had a house. Yet to me, it felt familiar, comforting in a distant, numb sort of way. I convinced myself the silence was what we needed, or at least room to pretend that everything wasn't falling apart. I hadn't been back here in nearly 20 years, but some things never change. Alders Creek was exactly as I remembered it. One main road, a diner, a grocery store, and clusters of houses scattered along the edge of the thick woodland. The townsfolk were kind, if a bit distant. They remembered me vaguely, the kid who'd left for college and never really looked back. They offered condolences about Sarah with sympathetic eyes and awkward smiles. I tried to keep conversations short. It was easier that way. Our new home was old, wooden, and filled with creaks and groans. But it was warm. Ellie ran through it the first day, exploring rooms and opening cabinets like it was some grand adventure. Seeing her excitement stirred something in me, a fragile kind of hope. Yet beneath that hope was persistent ache, a nagging emptiness that no amount of distance or quiet seemed to fill. By the end of the first week, Ellie started talking to herself. I brushed it off as normal kid stuff, a way of coping, creating a companion out of thin air when loneliness sets in. I had imaginary friends at her age too. But when I asked her who she was chatting with, she answered quickly. "Mr. Mapmaker," she told me, her voice cheerful yet serious. "He's nice, Daddy, really smart, but he's very particular about getting things right." I just smiled and nodded, glad she had found something to keep her mind busy. I had no idea how quickly Mr. Mapmaker would become so much more than just a comforting illusion. Over the next few weeks, Ellie didn't stop drawing. If anything, the maps became her obsession. Every evening, after dinner, she'd sit cross-legged at the coffee table, crayons spread out meticulously before her. I'd watch silently from the couch, pretending to read. But really, I was waiting, wondering what she'd sketch next. She'd hum softly to herself, lost in concentration, talking quietly as if someone were right beside her. "No, that's wrong," she'd mumble. "Mr. Mapmaker says the lake is deeper. Here." Most of the maps were innocent, even sweet. to draw the layout of her new house or a rough sketch of her school. But they started changing. She began illustrating places I recognized from childhood, ones I hadn't visited since I was her age, places I hadn't thought about in decades. An abandoned hunting cabin at the edge of the woods, weathered and crumbling, its roof sagging. She drew it exactly how I remembered it, right down to the broken shutters and faded red paint peeling from the walls. The thing is, Ellie's maps were unmistakably the work of a child. Crude lines, uneven proportions, colors bleeding past the edges. Trees were spindly things, their trunks a scribbled mess of brown, and lakes were heavy smudges of blue wax, pressed so hard into the paper that it sometimes tore. She'd label things in big, looping letters. Cabin, scrawled messily beneath a red blob of crayon. Big tree, next to a shaky green blob. Then came the lake. A stagnant, moss-covered pond, deep in the woods. So silent and still, that kids in Alders Creek used to dare each other to toss rocks into it, convinced that disturbing the water would wake something beneath. Ellie drew it with eerie accuracy, the surface shaded darkly, her crayon pressing hard enough to tear the paper in places. The edges of the map were smudged with her fingerprints, as though she traced the points countless times before finally getting it perfect. It wasn't just unsettling because of the details. It was unsettling because Ellie had no way of knowing about these places. I hadn't spoken a single word about them since we moved here. Hadn't even thought of them in decades. And yet, there they were, rendered clearly by my 6-year-old daughter. One evening, while Ellie worked silently, I noticed something else about the drawings. Hidden among the trees and buildings were tiny symbols, strange markings that resembled letters. When I asked Ellie what they meant, she only shrugged, not looking up from her work. "Mr. Mapmaker says they're important," she replied softly, her eyes fixed on the paper. "He says they help you find your way back." The implication unsettled me. "Back to where, Ellie?" I asked cautiously. She paused, still gripping the crayon tightly. She didn't look at me, but her voice lowered to a whisper. "Back home, Daddy." A shiver crawled down my spine, sudden and cold. Our home was right here, in this creaky old house with its peeling paint and overgrown yard. But the certainty in Ellie's voice made my stomach twist. For the first time, I wondered if home meant something else entirely to her. I gently took the drawing from her hands. "Ellie, sweetheart, why don't you draw something happier tonight? Maybe some flowers or your friends at school." She looked away for a second, then back at me, confused, as if I'd said something ridiculous. "Mr. Mapmaker doesn't like those things," she replied softly, almost apologetically, as if explaining the obvious. "He says we have to finish this one first." She turned back to her drawing, the tip of her crayon grinding into the paper again, the silence thick and heavy around us. And I watched the tiny hands move, as though guided. I focused on her movements, almost in a daze. I'd been staring so long that she had actually finished the map right in front of me. A crude crayon line leading through the woods to an old hunting cabin. Then, she started writing letters above the cabin. and that's when I snapped out of it and cursed myself under my breath for bothering her for just drawing. The morning I decided to follow Ellie's map started shortly after. I remember standing in the kitchen, staring down at the worn, folded paper on the counter Ellie had just finished the day prior. The hunting cabin, a spot she labeled in neat, childish handwriting. Where Mommy lives now. I laughed when I first read it, but that laughter had quickly faded, leaving behind an ache in my chest that hadn't dulled since losing Sarah. Ellie had seemed so serious when she handed it to me the night before. She looked up at me, eyes earnest, hopeful even. "Mr. Mapmaker said you need to see it, Daddy. He says it's important." And now, standing alone, coffee grown cold in my mug, I felt something settle in my gut. The rational part of me, the responsible adult, the grieving husband who'd buried Sarah, wanted to throw the map away and scold my child for this. Maybe she'd overheard neighbors talking, maybe she'd seen a picture somewhere in my parents' photo albums. But something darker, quieter, tugged at me. A whisper that had been growing louder ever since Ellie handed me the map. What if it's real? Of course, I had no reason to believe so. But anyone who had ever lost anyone as suddenly as I did would know that you would hold onto any inkling of hope like a lifeline, no matter how otherworldly it seemed to other people. I dropped Ellie at her aunt's house, barely registering the small talk exchanged in the doorway. My mind was already deep in those woods, following those strange, childish directions. I had to be losing it. Ellie was just imaginative, copying details she'd overheard, piecing together half-remembered fragments of conversations she wasn't meant to hear. It had to be. It took me nearly an hour of trudging through mud and bramble before the cabin appeared, exactly as she'd drawn it. An old structure, sagging and consumed by moss, half hidden by twisted skeletal trees. The air was thick, heavy with the smell of mold and earth. I pushed open the creaking door and stepped inside. Shadows swallowed me, broken only by slivers of daylight filtering through cracked walls. I could barely breathe, not from the air, but from the weight of memory. Childhood fears long dismissed, stories whispered between classmates of dark figures and missing people. I almost turned back then, until I saw something glinting on the floor, catching the sparse, dirty sunlight. I crouched, breath hitching painfully in my chest as my fingers curled around it. A silver bracelet, small and delicate, decorated with tiny emeralds. Her bracelet. My hand shook so badly I nearly dropped it. It couldn't be here. I'd chosen it myself for a birthday, buried with her when I'd said my last goodbye. It couldn't be here. But it was. I stumbled out of the cabin, the bracelet clenched tight in my fist, heart thundering in my ears. When I finally reached the car, I sat there, shaking for what felt like hours, staring down at the silver chain coiled in my palm, her memory wrapped tightly around me. By the time I made it back home, Ellie was in bed, but I couldn't wait. I knelt beside her, my voice breaking as I held up the bracelet. "Ellie, sweetheart, how did you know about this?" She opened her eyes slowly, sleepily, like she'd been expecting me. "Mr. Mapmaker told me," she said, yawning softly. "He knows a lot of things." "Did he tell you where he found it?" I whispered, afraid of her answer, yet desperate for it. Her eyes drifted closed, her voice fading into a sleepy whisper. "Mr. Mapmaker says Mommy gave it to him. He said it means you're on the right path." I sat there beside her bed, bracelet clenched tightly, heart hammering painfully in my chest. The right path. I didn't even know where I was going. But something told me it was already too late to turn back. After the bracelet incident, I couldn't pretend it was all coincidence anymore. Something was wrong. Something bigger than Ellie. Bigger than me. I needed answers, but finding them was harder than I expected. I went to see Mr. Gentry, the owner of the local hardware store. I stopped in under the pretense of needing gardening supplies, lingering until we were alone. As casually as I could, I mentioned the woods behind my property. The friendly smile he'd worn when I walked in vanished instantly, replaced with a careful blankness. His hands pausing over a row of rusty gardening shears. "What about him?" he asked, voice cautious, as if I just touched on something off limits. "Just curious. My daughter, she's been exploring around here lately. Says she's found some interesting places." His eyes flickered away, voice strained. "Kids have good imaginations." "It's more than that," I pressed. "She drew maps, detailed maps." He set down the shears heavily, still not meeting my gaze. "You keep her close. That's not a place kids should be wandering." He hesitated, his voice quieter, burdened. "And you shouldn't be poking around either." Before I could ask why, another customer entered, and the conversation ended abruptly. I kept trying, approaching others. The old woman at the grocery, Mr. Cooper down at the diner. But every time I mentioned the woods, I hit a wall of discomfort. Polite smiles would tighten, friendly chatter turning stiff and strained, and conversation quickly ended. No matter who I asked, I got the same warning disguised as advice. Stay out of the woods. The worst was Mrs. Callahan, who lived at the end of my street. She was ancient, even when I was a kid, and time hadn't made her any less sharp or perceptive. The afternoon sun was waning when I found her tending her rose garden, hands shaking slightly as she pruned dead leaves. "Mrs. Callahan," I called out, trying to sound casual, friendly. She paused, eyes narrowing behind her thick lenses, scrutinizing me closely. I swallowed, pushing through my discomfort. "Can I ask you something?" She nodded slowly, eyes sharp. "Ask, Benjamin." "The woods, the ones behind..." Her eyes narrowed, cutting me off before I could finish. Her voice was stern and quiet, carrying a deep warning. "Some questions are better left unanswered." "Please," I whispered, desperation leaking through my careful composure. "My daughter's drawn maps, things she couldn't know. Something's wrong, something is..." "Not something, Benjamin. Someone." She took a careful step toward me, lowering her voice further. "There's always something in those woods. Always has been. long before you and long after, it'll still be there. It finds ways of speaking, but the real danger, the real horror, is what it promises. She turned away sharply, pulling the door shut behind her, ending our conversation with a heavy finality. The silence left in her wake pressed in on me, deeper than before, as though the air itself had gone still. That night, I locked every window, bolted the back door, and double-checked every latch and lock in the house. I sat awake in the dark for hours, listening carefully, heart pounding at every rustle of wind and every distant snap of a branch. Ellie slept peacefully down the hall, unaware of the darkness that had taken root around us. I couldn't shake the feeling that it wasn't just the woods I had to worry about. Whatever I'd uncovered in my quest for answers was woven deeply into the heart of this town, an unspoken terror they'd grown up learning to ignore. The woods weren't just forbidden, they were feared. From then on, Ellie wasn't allowed outside without me. The forest loomed at the edge of our property like a silent predator, patient and hungry. No matter how hard I watched Ellie, though, the dread remained, creeping slowly into my chest like rot in old wood. It wasn't enough. Whatever had gripped Ellie was not letting go, despite her no longer going outside. I couldn't stay in that house anymore. Whatever was reaching out to Ellie, whatever was calling itself Mr. Mapmaker, had embedded itself too deeply. I had to get her out, had to get us away from that cursed forest before it swallowed us whole. Ellie fought the idea immediately, so unlike her usual gentle demeanor that it took me by surprise. She kicked and screamed as I carried her to the car, crying out that Mr. Mapmaker wouldn't let us leave, that we couldn't just abandon Mommy. Her words clawed at me, but I gritted my teeth, determined. It was time to put distance between Ellie and whatever darkness had been whispering in her ear. That night, as I packed our bags in tense silence, Ellie finally stopped pleading. She sat quietly in the corner of her room, drawing furiously, her tiny hand gripping the crayon with unsettling force. I didn't dare interrupt her, afraid I'd trigger another meltdown. At least she was calm. At least she was safe. Or so I thought. Sometime after midnight, I woke abruptly, my heart hammering in the silence. Something immediately felt wrong, but I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was, so I looked around. The hallway looked just the same as it always had, but it took a moment longer to realize what was wrong. Ellie's bedroom door, usually kept cracked open, was wide open, and the hallway beyond utterly still. I moved quietly, trying to remain calm as I stepped into an empty room, stomach tightening painfully, when I saw the note resting on a pillow. It was another map, far more precise than the others, drawn hastily in the dark strokes of charcoal. The label read simply, "Mommy is waiting." My breath caught, heart lurching with fear. My daughter was gone. I sprinted out the front door into the suffocating blackness of the forest, screaming Ellie's name until my throat burned. Twigs and branches tore at my skin, cutting my face and arms as I crashed blindly through the darkness. Nothing made sense anymore. Trees twisted grotesquely around me, paths doubled back impossibly, landmarks shifted into alien shapes, exactly like the twisted images Ellie had drawn. Every step felt wrong, unnatural, as if the forest itself was reshaping around me, leading me deeper, guiding me into its heart. Then, finally, the trees opened into a clearing I'd never seen before. Moonlight bathed the clearing in pale, ghostly white, but there were no shadows, only stark emptiness, like the light itself feared to touch whatever stood in the center. Ellie was there, perfectly still. Her face was serene, empty of emotion, eyes staring blankly ahead. And beside her, standing what must have been at least 10 feet tall, its form shifting like smoke and ink, was who I assumed to be Mr. Mapmaker. The being Ellie had innocently named and trusted, the monster who twisted her grief into something dark and dangerous. My fists clenched, rage and helplessness swelling in my chest. "Let her go," I demanded, my voice shaking. "Please, she's just a little girl." Ellie turned her head slowly, mechanically, and smiled a hollow, distant smile. "Mommy says we can all be together again," she whispered. Her voice was soft, gentle, but utterly devoid of humanity. It was a mouth speaking, but the words belonged to someone or something else. The figure beside her shifted, its shape rippling and unstable, as if fighting to maintain its form. When it spoke, its voice crawled from every direction, seeping from the earth, the trees, the very sky itself. It vibrated through my bones, settling deep into my marrow. "You've come far," it murmured, the sound a twisted mockery of human comfort. "You deserve a reward." "I don't want a reward," I spat back. "Just give me my daughter." "You misunderstand," the mapmaker said gently, almost sorrowfully. "Everything has a price. To leave with her, you must leave something behind." My breath caught in my throat, heart thundering in my chest. I understood immediately. It wasn't asking for something trivial, not a keepsake or a memory. He wanted something deeper, something fundamental, a trade, an exchange. I didn't stop to think. I couldn't afford to. Instinct seized me, overpowering every hesitation, every shred of fear. I lunged forward, wrapped my arms around Ellie, and yanked her away from the towering silhouette of Mr. Mapmaker. The shadowy figure unleashed an enraged, whispering hiss, 1,000 voices slithering into my ears, sharp and venomous. But I didn't listen. I turned, Ellie tight in my grasp, and I ran. Trees twisted inward, clawing branches tore at our clothes and skin, and the very earth beneath our feet buckled, as though desperate to hold us there, to trap us forever. The air filled with screams, raw, tortured voices that ripped through my skull, begging, pleading, commanding us to stop. Ellie's small body went limp in my arms, her head bouncing weakly against my shoulder with every frantic step. Terror rose like bile in my throat, nearly choking me. But I couldn't slow down, couldn't falter, not even for a second. My lungs burned, my muscles screamed in agony, but I kept pushing forward, stumbling blindly through the endless maze of woods, desperately seeking some semblance of familiarity. I could feel the mapmaker behind us, a presence of icy, endless hunger, closing the distance, furious of being robbed of its prize. It whispered harshly, angrily, promising suffering, promising that we would never escape. But I refused to let its poison seep into my heart. With a final burst of strength, I barreled through a wall of dense branches. Pain exploded across my face and arms, but suddenly, blessedly, I broke free. I stumbled forward onto familiar ground, tripping over the garden stones at the edge of our backyard. We collapsed together into the damp grass, bloodied, bruised, but alive. The oppressive silence was almost unbearable. The woods behind us were quiet now, as if they'd given up their pursuit, at least for the moment. For several heartbeats, I lay there, chest heaving, gasping for air, just holding Ellie, savoring the fragile illusion of safety. Then I realized Ellie wasn't moving. My stomach twisted violently as I rolled her over, gently brushing her tangled hair away from her face. Her eyes were closed, her skin pale and cold. I shook her gently at first, then with growing panic, desperation tightening my voice. Ellie? Ellie, wake up. Baby, please, wake up. I felt sick. Every horrible possibility crashing through my mind at once. Tears blurred my vision, heart hammering painfully in my chest. Then mercifully, her eyes fluttered open, staring blankly toward the night sky. Relief flooded me, powerful enough to make me dizzy. But the feeling was short-lived. Ellie's gaze wandered aimlessly, unfocused, confused. When she finally turned to me, her eyes were empty, like she was seeing me for the very first time. "Who?" she whispered weakly, voice trembling and uncertain. "Who are you?" My blood turned to ice. "Ellie, it's Daddy," I stammered, trying desperately to keep my voice calm, gentle. "It's me, sweetheart. You're safe now." She pulled back slightly, her eyes flickering fearfully, clearly frightened. No memory of the bond we'd shared since the moment she'd been born. My daughter, the reason for every struggle, every pain I endured, looked at me. I clutched her tightly, my shoulders shaking silently, unable to even cry. The house felt painfully empty as the terrible realization sunk in. I'd saved Ellie's life, but somehow, I'd still lost her. The weeks passed. Ellie healed physically. Cuts faded, bruises yellowed and vanished. But something fundamental inside her never came back. Each morning, I woke to a house that was both painfully familiar and unbearably foreign. Ellie moved through the same routines, ate breakfast in the same chair, slept in the same bed. But the little girl, who had once filled these rooms with laughter and curiosity, was no longer there. The doctors had an easy answer, neatly packaged as severe dissociative trauma. Losing a parent was a blow that could fracture any child's world, they said. But they hadn't been there. They hadn't watched the shadow-formed monstrosity whisper impossible things. They hadn't felt reality itself bend around them. Ellie's memories weren't buried under layers of grief. They'd been torn away, ripped from her as payment to something older and far crueler than mere loss. We lived in strained silence. Ellie no longer mentioned Mr. Mapmaker, and she stopped drawing maps altogether, as if that obsession had never existed. But she also stopped calling me Dad. My name felt strange on her lips, polite, distant, like she was addressing someone else's father, like I was no longer part of her story. I tried to bridge the gap. Little gestures, reminders, favorite meals, and bedtime stories we'd read 100 times. But her response was always the same. A polite, confused smile, as if humorously tolerating the well-meaning stranger who kept trying too hard. The house was quieter than ever before, the silence heavy enough to suffocate. But it was preferable to the alternative, the whispers that lingered at the edge of my dreams, voices echoing softly through the hallways, mocking my choice, reminding me of what I'd sacrificed. Whatever I'd done that night, whatever I'd given away, was the cost. Ellie was here, safe, physically unharmed. But I had not brought my daughter home. I had simply traded one horror for another, a monkey paw's wish. So, every night when I'm alone, I sit in my office and draw maps. I started with random doodles, with no real inspiration. But slowly, they're becoming more and more cohesive. I scribble things without thinking, yet they seem to make some kind of sense. I have not seen Mr. Mapmaker, yet sometimes I feel him guiding my hand in strange ways. Soon, I'll have a guide to follow, to lead me back to the spot in the forest where Mr. Mapmaker makes his trades. I'm going to get Ellie back. I just don't know what it will truly cost.